Lamb of God by Kevin Lenihan.
Sister Margaret sat on the front pew of the church, staring intensely at the ornate iron door that led to the church basement. In her hands, she gripped a leather-bound book, rubbing at the raised detailing on the cover nervously. What had she done? Had it worked? In many ways, she hoped that it hadn't, though until now, she hadn't been thinking clearly enough to consider that possibility. She could have sworn she had heard Father Michael calling her name from the other side of the door, just once. He hadn't seemed panicked or confused, as one might expect if one found themselves dead one minute and alive again the next. The voice had seemed calm, eerily calm, and it hadn't used her chosen name either. When she became a nun, she had been given the name Margaret by the convent's mother superior. She had never liked it, though. She had wanted to keep her own name. Helen, already the name of a saint, but the Mother Superior had insisted. Bitch. She crossed herself at the thought of cursing the Mother Superior, almost without thinking. Then she looked down at the book in her hands and shook her head. Though the cover was mostly worn away, there was still the distinct outline of a pentagram there. She stood up and walked slowly and deliberately over to and up the steps that led to the altar, all the while muttering the Hail Mary under her breath. She walked around behind the altar and secreted the book inside a little cubbyhole there, before resting both her hands on the altar to stop them shaking. The cold marble did little to comfort her as she looked down the aisle of the small medieval church to the ornate doors at the far end, sunlight streaming down at an oblique angle through the many stained glass windows that lined either side of the church, each one depicting a scene from the Stations of the Cross. She shook her head, walked around the altar and down the steps, every footfall echoing loudly around the church as her boots impacted on the marble floor, her grey habit flowing out behind her head like the tail of a comet as she strode quickly to the huge double doors, being careful not to let herself look behind her towards the basement. She placed a hand on each one and flung them both open, feeling cold air and relief flowing over her as they revealed the huge graveyard outside, the stones green with moss and lichen, the sun shining down between the gaps in the canopy formed by the many trees that were planted around and throughout the churchyard. Out here in the light of day, she felt silly that she had entertained the thought that she could possibly have resurrected Father Michael. Just by reading a few lines from a silly old book and bleeding on his Bible? Ridiculous. Only God had the power or authority to give or take away life. Yet still, as she turned to close the doors behind her, she couldn't help glancing at the basement door and feeling a chill run up from her feet all the way to her chest, and for a moment, it lingered there. She tensed her jaw, mentally shook herself, and shut the doors with a dull thud, fumbling with the huge ring of keys as she felt for the familiar jagged shape of the correct one, right next to the rounded end of the key to the basement. She jammed the key in the lock, twisted it, and immediately felt better as the lock clicked into place. She turned to her right and strode off towards the parish house, each step relieving the chill in her chest as it took her further and further from the church doors. The parish house was a small stone building, consisting of little more than a kitchen, two bedrooms and a bathroom. Like everything else around here, it was at least 100 years old, drafty and very close to falling down. She hadn't really minded up until now, as it had let her live very closely with Father Michael. In life she had admired him greatly, the way he had been able to make the best of even the most miserable situation. And this place had been miserable. The church wasn't really used anymore but for the odd funeral and burial. It was little more than a landmark in the local area. Mostly they had just tended the graves and consoled the rare mourners. Why they had sent a great man like Father Michael here was beyond her. She hadn't been liked by her peers, this she knew, though she never questioned the decisions of her superiors. They had told her to come here, so she went. Perhaps it was Father Michael's curiosity that had earned him their ire. He had a certain open way of looking at the world that many of the church leaders might have found shameful. It was this curiosity, she surmised, that motivated his collecting of strange books and old religious texts, long since excised from core Catholicism. That was where she had found the book that now rested, secreted in the altar in the church. She briefly wondered if it had been wrong to leave something like that in such a sacred place, but the chill in her chest returned briefly and gave her pause. She did not want to go back in there. Sister Margaret awoke to the sound of rain pattering gently against her bedroom window. The cold feeling in her was strong now as she opened her eyes. The room was absolutely dark, save for the light streaming in from the kitchen, the door now sitting ajar. Silhouetted in that light was the form of a man. She recognized the shape immediately. It was Father Michael. Though she couldn't see his face in the darkness, she could see the familiar square shoulders, short hair, and delicately shaped ears. She felt compelled to cry out to him, but found no words would come. She wanted to leap out of her bed and run to him, but her arms and legs would not respond. When he spoke from the doorway, though she recognized his voice, it was somehow wrong, as if someone else was speaking the same words from somewhere just behind him, a moment just before he spoke them himself. Helen, my love, why did you leave me down there? It was so cold in the basement. I woke up in the darkness and I thought I heard your voice, but you weren't there. Sister Margaret contorted her face, trying to respond. Still, the words would not come. I called out to you. I know you heard me. But you left me there, to stink and rot on the floor. Is that all I am to you? So much awful? Sister Margaret managed to shake her head, tears now streaming down her face as she tried to will her arms and legs to move, yet still they remained too heavy to lift. You abandoned me, like you abandoned your child. You took your shame to the sisters in the convent, and you let them take it from you. And now you've abandoned me. Come to me. Hold me. Lift me out of the darkness. I love you, Helen. The silhouette sidestepped into the room, out of the light, and disappeared into the darkness, its footsteps heavy and loud as she heard it make its way, unseen, around the bed. She felt a blast of cold air across her face, and the intense smell of rotting meat filled her nose as dual voices came again, this time from right next to her ear. Don't you want me? Suddenly, Sister Margaret felt the power of her arms and legs return to her. She rolled out of bed, away from the spot she had last heard the voice, falling hard onto the bare wooden floorboards, picking up a few splinters in her arm as she did so. In a second, she was on her feet, reached out and slapped the light switch next to the open door, flooding the room with weak yellow light as the bare bulb suspended from the ceiling flickered to life. She stood there naked, breathing heavily, as she looked around, wide-eyed. The room was bare, the door was closed, and no one stood beside her bed. No rain was pattering against the window. Had it been a dream? It had seemed so real. She sniffed. No, she could still smell the scent of rotting meat in the air, though it was fading fast. She threw the door to the kitchen open, stamped across the floor, her bare feet slapping against the cold stone, and snatched the ring of keys from the hook by the door. She pulled a long grey coat that had once belonged to Father Michael from the coat stand, threw it around her shoulders to guard against the cold, grabbed a little blue hand-wound electric lantern from the hook next to it, and charged out through the front door, not bothering to close it behind her as she pounded her way across the graveyard, ignoring the sharp pain of the gravel under her bare feet. When she flicked the switch on the lantern, she was suddenly confronted by a large collection of faces staring back at her from the night. She was intimately familiar with each one, as she had seen them every day for the last 2 years, suspended from crosses set on top of graves, bearded and forlorn. Some days she would talk to them for hours, often imagining that they would talk back, telling her that she was doing a good job, that there would be a special place reserved in heaven because of her piety. Now they just looked disappointed. She ignored them as she stamped by, electing instead to concentrate on the dark, imposing form of the church steeple as it loomed closer and closer. When she got to the doors of the church, she found the key on the ring instinctively, without even looking. In moments she had the doors flung open and was rushing down the central aisle of the church, her feet slapping as she approached the basement door, the light of the lantern flinging about the church wildly, casting grotesque shadows on the walls as she fumbled again with the keys. She grasped the basement key, thrust it into the lock, and moved to twist it, and paused. "What am I doing?" she said aloud, her soft voice filling the empty church and reverberating back at her. She pulled the key back out of the lock, stepped backward slowly, and flopped down in the pew, finding herself once again staring at the door to the basement, though this time feeling much more foolish than afraid. Father Michael wasn't behind that door. Well, he was, but he certainly wasn't walking and talking. He had slipped or tripped and cracked his head. He had been long dead when she found him. She had cried for a long time at the bottom of the steps, talking to the father, begging him to get up, telling him all the things she had been too afraid to tell him when he was alive. She had struck him in the chest a few times, more out of hopeless frustration than from any real attempt at resuscitation. And she had just walked away and left him down there. She told herself she would call someone eventually, but the time just hadn't seemed right. And now, here she was. Maybe all this old world mysticism had just gotten to her. She glanced over at the altar, where she had hidden the old book, and laughed to herself at how silly she had been. She stood up to leave, lifted the lantern, and walked to the aisle, turning to head towards the doors out of the church. From behind her came a voice, muffled by the door. Helen, have you come to release me? She spun around and shone the light at the door. Though it remained shut, she felt like it had somehow grown bigger, more imposing than before. There were three gentle knocks, and the voice came again, though louder this time. Please, Helen, let me hold you. Finally. She shook her head, her face a rictus of misery, as she clenched the large ring of keys in her fist and shook them at the door. No, you're not real. She spun back around and ran up the aisle to the doors. Behind her, the voice screamed through the door, barely human now.
Come back here and set me free, you whore! No one will ever love you the way I love you!
She didn't bother pausing to shut the doors of the church behind her as she sprinted through them. She could feel the soles of her feet being sliced open on the gravel of the path as she raced to the little house, crashed through the door, flung it shut behind her, and collapsed, leaning her back against it on the stone floor of the kitchen. She held her head in her hand and cried for a long time before she finally found the strength to stand up and walk back to her bedroom. She knew it couldn't have been real. God wouldn't let anything like this happen. Not really. She threw herself onto her bed and lay there for a short time before falling into a restless and terrible sleep. In her dream, she found herself once again lying on her bed, unable to move, though this time there was no silhouette in the doorway, only silence and bright moonlight for the longest time. Then suddenly a hand grasped her ankle. It was on the end of an arm clothed in a black sleeve, reaching out and around from underneath the bed. Slowly a figure pulled itself out from underneath there. It had the short, dirty fur hair and proud, handsome cheekbones of Father Michael, but its jaw hung down loosely, almost a foot below the rest of the head. It pulled itself up onto the bed and straddled her, looking at her with those familiar deep brown eyes. It arched over her further, the unnaturally wide jaw almost filling her vision as the voice of Father Michael came out of it, calm and unfiltered. You are my lamb and my love. Love is sacrifice. Die for me, my lamb. This time when Sister Margaret awoke, she was lying face down on top of the covers, still wearing Father Michael's overcoat, the early morning light streaming in through the small window. Both the coat and the sheets beneath her were soaked through with sweat. She peeled herself off the bed and walked slowly out of the room and into the bathroom. She stared at her face for a long time in the mirror, the bags under her eyes fascinating her as she wondered if she was really going mad. She was shaken from her reverie by the sound of a car pulling up outside. She ran from the bathroom and across the kitchen to the front door and looked out through the window. A man wearing a black suit and a priest's collar was getting out of a small blue car and looking around the graveyard curiously. He shrugged to himself, reached back into the car, turned off the engine, stood up straight, and slammed the car door shut with a loud chunk sound. As the man set off towards the church, she noticed the doors lying wide open as she had left them in her panic the night before. She was about to bolt out through the door and stop the man when she realized she was still naked but for the coat, which now stank of sweat. She ran into her bedroom, hastily threw on her modest grey dress and a grey headscarf that was hanging there, covering her hair as best she could. Then she forced her uncomfortable hard shoes onto her aching feet, which were now covered in dried blood and dirt. She grabbed the keys from the floor where she had apparently dropped them, rushed out of the house, limping awkwardly, and made her way as fast as she could to the doors of the church. She rounded the doorway just in time to see the unknown priest reach over and grasp the handle of the basement door.
"Excuse me!"
she shouted, causing the man to spin around in surprise.
"But what do you think you're doing in here?"
"Oh my, you scared me," said the man, smiling an embarrassed smile. As he did so, Sister Margaret realised the man was much, much younger than she had assumed. He looked to her to be barely out of his teens, pale, short, and somewhat acne-scarred.
"Well, I must say, I think you scared me a little more,"
Sister Margaret said, her tone unsympathetic and scolding.
"What do you think you're doing in here?"
"My apologies, sister," said the young man, seeming genuinely sorry and perhaps a little afraid of this angry, wide-eyed woman with bloodshot eyes who was screaming at him. I came here to see Father Michael. He told me I could borrow a set of wedding vestments. He said he kept them hanging up in the church basement because the air was dry down there. I'm sorry, sister.
He gave her a weak, nervous smile and took a step back from her as her eyes seemed to grow wider at this statement. Softly she said,
"Father Michael told you?"
The young man nodded frantically.
Yes, that's right. It was a few weeks ago, sister. He said it would be fine to just stop by the day before.
He shot her what he thought was a winning smile, but turned out to be more akin to baring of teeth. Sister Margaret shrank visibly as she seemed to take in this information, a look of disappointment briefly crossing her face.
A few weeks ago?
Yes, that's right, answered the young priest, though it hadn't really been a question.
My name's Father Monaghan.
He held out his hand to shake hers. She looked down at it in what looked to be mild disgust, then back up at his smooth, youthful features.
Well, Father Monaghan, I'm afraid the good Father Michael isn't here at present. You'll just have to come back another time.
But the wedding is tomorrow morning, he babbled, confusion crossing his face. Can't you just let me run down to the basement and get them?
There's no key, she said sharply. You'll just have to do without.
Father Monaghan looked down at the key ring in her hand, doubtfully.
Isn't it one of those?
He said, pointing to them, his brow knitting together. From the door behind the man came the muffled voice of Father Michael.
Sacrifice the lamb.
Sister Margaret's heart leapt in her chest as she waited for the young priest to react, but he just continued to stare at her.
Well, is it one of those keys or not?
He insisted.
Didn't you hear that?
She asked, looking at the man for any sign of pretense or deception.
Hear what?
He said, regarding her quizzically.
Oh, I'm sure it was nothing, she said, a smile crossing her face for the first time since the young priest had arrived.
She looked down at the keys again and laughed brightly.
Of course, I have the key right here.
She pushed past him and inserted the key in the door. After taking a deep breath, she turned it in the lock. The click reverberated around the old church and seemed to echo for a long time afterwards. She stepped back from the door and gestured towards it.
Down you go.
Oh, okay,
he said, stepping past her, glad at least to no longer be arguing and hopefully soon getting away from this strange woman. He pushed the heavy door open gently and looked down at the first few stone steps as they descended into darkness. He felt his hand along the wall inside.
Is there a light switch?
Sister Margaret threw all her weight into the man's back as hard as she could, sending him flying down the stairs and into the darkness. She then grasped the door handle and pulled it closed, slipping the key back into the lock and turning it. She stepped back from the door as someone on the other side of the door banged it three times.
Hello? Are you still out there? What are you doing? Please, can you... Oh. What? Hello? Who's there?
Sister Margaret sat down on the pew opposite and waited for a long time, but no more sound came from the door. She jingled the keys absent-mindedly for a few minutes before standing up in a sort of a daze, walking up the aisle of the church and out through the doors. This time, when she turned to leave, she looked at the basement door and smiled. That night, she dreamed of Father Michael. In the dream, he was smiling. She felt happiness and contentment as she never had before. Just before she awoke, he held her close and thanked her. She had done the right thing, and this was her reward. The next day, Sister Margaret awoke, feeling dreadfully ill. She tossed and turned in a half-waking nightmare as the day wore on, not leaving her bed. That night, the terrible nightmare returned. The thing that looked like Father Michael clawed its way from under her bed, its jaw hanging loosely, stinking of rancid meat, speaking in his soft voice, though the words it said were a little different. As it leaned over her and lowered itself down, as if to consume her, it muttered,
"You are my lamb and my love. Love is sacrifice. Kill for me, my lamb."
Once again she awoke, sheets soaked in sweat, though her sickness had left her. She could not shake the memory of peace and happiness she had felt the night previous. It scratched at the back of her mind and wouldn't leave. It made her sick to think about it, though the desire to return to the thought was completely overwhelming. She staggered out of bed and over to the bathroom, staring at the haggard face in the mirror, almost unrecognizable to her at this point.
It was as if she had aged 10 years in the last 3 days. From outside came the sound of a car pulling up. She ran out to the front door and looked through the window at the white car with blue lights that had stopped beside Father Monaghan's car. She closed her eyes and cursed herself for not moving it. A tall man in a black padded uniform and a cap got out, walked around to the front of the car and examined the license plate. He pulled a tiny notebook out of his breast pocket, scribbled something in it and put it back. Then he looked around the graveyard, the church, and then over at the house. Seeing her in the window, he waved to her and started to approach. She ran to the bedroom and threw on the same clothes she had worn 2 days before, wincing with pain again as she forced her shoes onto her feet. A knocking came from the front door as she rushed back out and pulled the door open. A man at least a head taller than her looked down with a big friendly smile on his face as he removed his hat from his head.
"Sister Margaret, is it?"
he said, his voice booming through the small house.
"Yes." "Constable?"
she croaked, her throat dry. "It's Garda, actually," he said, continuing to smile warmly. "Garda Carson, to be more precise." He glanced past her at the threadbare kitchen. "Would there be a Father Michael Skelton living here?" She was about to answer when she noticed a movement from somewhere far behind the man in the doorway. On one of the graves in the distance, Jesus hung from the cross, all set in stone. The head of the stone Jesus turned to look at her, its face a mask of sadness as it stared at her with its grey marble eyes. She took a step back and covered her mouth in shock. Garda Carson turned around to see what she was looking at and assumed it was the church.
"Is he in there, is he? Sure, I'll go in and talk to him."
She continued to stare at the stone Jesus, which was now beginning to show its teeth, its eyes becoming narrow and angry.
"You all right there, sister?"
"What?" she said, dragging her eyes from the enraged Messiah and looking up at the policeman with confusion. "If you don't mind me saying so, you don't look well," he said, a little apologetically. You didn't happen to see a Father Monaghan recently by any chance?"
"Yes,"
she said without thinking, as her gaze was drawn inexorably back to the Jesus hanging on its stone cross. Its face now stared at her madly, opening and closing its mouth as if screaming at her in a blind rage.
"You have," said Garda Carson, shocked. "We've been looking for him since yesterday morning. He was supposed to officiate a wedding and never showed up. His housekeeper said he went to see Father Skelton 2 days ago and never came back."
He looked at her curiously as she continued to stare past him.
"Do you know where he is now?"
She looked back up at him now as if seeing him for the first time and smiled.
"He's in the church basement with Father Michael," she said dreamily. "Oh, is he?"
said Garda Carson, his smile dropping a little.
"Would you mind showing me?"
"Of course I will,"
she whispered as she walked towards him. He moved out of the way to let her pass and followed a few feet behind as she made her way along the gravel path towards the church, jingling the keys. As they got closer to the church, Sister Margaret drifted off a little to her left. For a second he thought maybe she was getting ready to run away, but he was shocked when her hand shot out towards a nearby grave and slapped a statue of Jesus Christ hanging on the cross, hitting it hard on one cheek. From the sound it made, she had definitely broken several bones in her hand in the process. He watched her carefully as she then wandered over to the large doors of the church and inserted the key with her still functional right hand and unlocked the door.
"They're in the basement, you say,"
he said, trying to maintain an upbeat tone to his voice as his hand moved slowly over the baton in his belt.
"With the front door locked?"
She didn't answer him as she pulled the doors open and stepped inside, walking quickly and deliberately down the aisle. Garda Carson followed slightly further behind than he had been, allowing her to get far enough ahead that he was just arriving at the end of the aisle as she was unlocking the basement door.
"They're down there,"
she said, stepping aside and gesturing towards the unlocked but still closed door.
"Okay," said Garda Carson, once more smiling his friendly smile. "Perhaps you'd like to call them for me."
Her face became grave at this as she started to fidget nervously with the keys.
Okay,
she said, and walked over to the door. She gently pushed it open a little and backed away.
"Oh, Father Michael, there's a policeman here."
When there was no response, Garda Carson smiled at her as she glanced back at him nervously.
"Maybe you should go down and bring them up, eh?" No, no, I don't think so, she blurted out as she walked over to the door and pulled it closed. Garda Carson rushed over as she fumbled desperately with the key ring. Come on now, he said, snatching them from her. That's enough of... Oh, shit! She grabbed onto his sleeve, screamed, and pulled him as hard as she could towards the basement door. To her credit, she did manage to move the huge man forward a few steps before he regained his balance and planted his feet firmly on the ground. Sister Margaret had not been expecting the sudden stop, though, as she lost her grip on his sleeve and fell backwards into the basement door, which flew open as she hit it hard. Garda Carson reached out in an attempt to grab her, but she was just out of his reach as his fingers barely caressed the end of hers before she barreled backwards and into the darkness. Though he would not mention it to anyone later, Garda Carson, at that moment, saw, just as she disappeared into the darkness, a grotesque and distended face just behind her, its jaw hanging low, two hands reaching out either side as if to catch her. There was a very brief, blood-curdling scream from the woman, and then nothing. He pulled a long torch off his belt, flicked the switch on it, and shone it down the steps. At the bottom lay three bodies. One, he was sure, was Sister Margaret. Beside her lay two priests. None of them were moving. Garda Carson later asked, as the detectives and forensic technicians were just finishing up at the crime scene, how it was possible that two people, both the nun and the young priest, had huge portions of their tongues bitten off.
Sometimes that'll happen on impact or in death throes. Whatever it was, it certainly happened in the fall.
When he asked where the tongues were now, the coroner just shrugged.
They probably swallowed them.
Of course, that didn't explain the chunks of raw meat caught between the teeth of the older priest, but no one but Garda Carson felt the need to dwell on it. Accidents happen?